You're listening to the Hard Men Podcast, reclaiming biblical masculinity in a world of softness. Well, welcome to this episode of the Hard Men Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Kahn, and very excited today to have some backstage content from County Before Country. Really excited a few weeks ago to go with Brian Sauvay and Lexi were there as well, and little Winnie, to check out County Before Country. We were on hand with Michael Foster and company, a lot of great speakers. Doug Wilson was there. We had Aaron Wren. We had John Moody, Arthur Kwan Lee. We also had Delano Squires. Really great content produced at that content, but probably more than anything, the thing I valued about the conference in Batavia, Ohio at Michael Foster's church, East River Church, was all the networking that we got to do with so many wonderful people from around the country. Lots of people from Moscow. Again, Andrew Krepuschets from Red Balloon and a bunch of other projects was on hand. Got to talk to him, got to hear about how he's built businesses and how he's impacting the community in Moscow. Really got to see a lot of sneak peeks about how people are building Christendom in many different, unique, decentralized ways, which is really, really exciting. So I'd encourage you guys, if you get a chance, check out County Before Country on Facebook. I know Michael Foster is going to be posting more and more of the content and just some different stuff from that conference. So by all means, check that out. Definitely recommend it. Now, in this episode, we are talking with, I sit down, first of all, with John Moody. John gave kind of a fiery speech, and there was a lot of oohs and ahs, and it was really good, and a lot of things that we needed to hear. And John, I think, you know, he got to go the first night after Doug Wilson. And John's a foodie guy. He had his Rogue Food t-shirt. He had his crazy curly hair. At one point, he was even doing some, I think it was Brazilian jiu-jitsu with some other people on stage. So really, really cool to see John there. And he's a family guy. He loves food. He loves building things locally. And so it was good to hear from him. He talked a lot about Samwise Gamgee and how, look, in Lord of the Rings, the one character we can all kind of be is Sam, right? He's a family man. He's building things locally. He's doing a lot of great work. So a lot of great content. John also talked about Christian cosplay, right? How many guys are online fighting fights that really don't matter? They're not building anything locally. So it was a good challenge. So I'm going to sit down. We're going to ask a few questions to John behind the scenes about his speech and kind of what he thinks and thought that we should take away from the conference, which I thought was good. And then second, we have Nate Spearing from Warriors Tending Gardens. Nate was helping me out with soundboard and mics. Really appreciate that. His boys were on hand as well. And he sat down with Aaron Wren. Really interesting discussion on counterinsurgency versus insurgency. A lot of the tactics that Aaron Wren had recommended that we be using. A lot of stuff, you know, it was interesting. I feel this way about Aaron all the time where it's like, he really challenges my thinking. He makes me think through some of the things that we hold dear. I don't agree with him on a lot of it, actually. I'm all in on culture war. But he definitely had some good points to be made, stuff that we need to think through if we're going to be engaging with the culture and sort of how we do that. A lot of good thoughts in his talk about why the right often loses, right? We don't understand the war that we're in. We often don't understand the people that we're trying to reach. So some really good stuff there. And I think a really good, interesting conversation, again, with Nate Spearing. As we jump in, I do want to recommend one of our sponsors to you, one of the people that I love most from the beginning of the Hard Men Podcast. And that is my friends, Quinn and Samantha Bible at Salt and Strings Butchery. This is, of course, if you saw any of the photos from the conference, the last day it was super hot. So I finally broke down. I took off my blazer and tie and I put on a t-shirt. And what t-shirt did I have on? If you remember, it was the Salt and Strings Butchery t-shirt. We even met some people who I think after the conference were going down to Illinois to meet Quinn and pick up half beef. So it is also one of my favorite places to pick up meat. I love it. It's been wonderful for our family. Super high quality beef. The ribeye's all-time favorite. Thick cut is what we asked for. It's actually Dan Burkholder and Quinn and Anthony worked real hard to get us that meat. We also bought a hog from them. which was phenomenal. We are plowing through breakfast sausage and bacon. But, you know, this is one of the things we talk about as men. Look, we're trying to address our nutrition as a very primary thing for how you feel. It impacts your entire life. It impacts your hormones, especially testosterone. You want to get your T in the right place. You're going to need a lot of red meat. Animal fats and animal proteins are absolutely essential for healthy lifestyles. Enough of the processed foods, seed oils, etc. We need to be eating animal proteins and animal fats. We've been lied to about that. And so definitely be sure to check out Salt and Strings Butchery. You can find that at saltandstrings.com. Again, this is the butchery from my friend Quinn and his wife Samantha Bible, supporters of this show, followers of the Hard Men podcast pretty much from the beginning. Be sure to check that out. You can order your meat box online today, and we will include links in the show notes for that. Now we are going to jump in, and it's going to be me interviewing John Moody, and then that will be followed up by Nate Spearing interviewing Aaron Wren. Well, welcome to County Before Country. This is the backstage VIP pass with the one and only John Moody.
Hey, Eric.
John, it's good to have you with us. Now, last night you had to go after Doug Wilson, but you give this speech, and there were a lot of like, wow, he just went there. So I guess give us just a little bit of gist. What was the inspiration for the talking points? What got you going for this year's conference?
When I was thinking about the conference, I mainly kept thinking about the book of Nehemiah.
Yeah.
And then over the past couple months, in some of our circles, I see so many men spending so much time and energy, you know, basically doing cosplay Christianity online.
Yeah.
They're fighting people who are no actual threat to them. And it's so effeminate. It just drives me nuts. You know, I'm like, you have, Go protest gender queer hour in your local library. Like, go fight somebody who's actually a threat to you. You know,
right.
Why are you Baptists picking on the Presbyterians again? I went to seminary. I wasn't just a typical seminary student. I was the student you hated because I ruined the curve in your seminary class.
And that's actually was my seminary class, John.
Yeah. Or I was your Garrett fellow. I'm the one who actually graded your papers and gave you the bad grade.
Right.
Because you're an idiot. And I see guys on social media. Let's debate baptism again. Let's debate the right understanding of the regulative principle again. Let's debate beard length. I'm like, dudes, like the brightest minds in Christianity have debated some of these issues for centuries. And these are men who are smarter, sharper, more well-read than you will ever be. But you social media man, you will finally settle the baptism debate. I'm just like, come on, guys.
You actually, John, you actually went there. And I didn't know if a lot of people thought you would, but we heard Fight, Laugh, Feast, Baptist, and Transgenderism from your talk. It's in a way, though, you know, Hard Men podcast, come on. I was like, it's kind of refreshing, though, because it needed to be said. That's not the fight. Mm-hmm. So if you say to those guys, hey, that's not the fight. We're here. We're talking about localism. What is the fight? What were you calling guys to be engaged in actually doing?
Yeah. First and foremost, in actually being men.
Yeah.
So a lot of guys, I think the reason they love internet cosplay Christianity is that means I don't have to play chutes and ladder with my kids again. That means I don't have to read To Give a Mouse a Cookie for the 472nd time. It's a way they can say to themselves, I'm doing something important, when they're not. It lets them cover up the lack of real manliness in taking ownership and dominion in their real world by saying, well, I'm doing important theological work online.
I got in a debate on Fight, Laugh, Feast. I owned them. You didn't actually do anything.
Oh, yeah, exactly. It's like, who did you, you know, like when guys debate baptism for the thousandth time on social? Who actually benefits? What new insight are you going to offer the church that has not already appeared in 200 books over the past 400 years?
Yeah.
I'm just like, come on, guys. Like, why don't you fight with people who are a true threat to you and your family and your county and your country's future? You know, why are you hiding out in all of these different places instead of actually engaging with real people in the real world? I think it's because a lot of guys in our circles are a bit effeminate, and they will discover very quickly how much fear of man they really have.
Yeah.
You know, it's a totally different ball game to stand across from a flesh and blood person you know in real life who is cross-dressing their son as a girl and say to them, dude, I've known you for 2 decades. What the heck are you thinking?
Yeah.
This is a boy. Are you, like, I have a friend, I'm going to have to face him face to face and say to him, are you really going to chop off your son's genitals?
Right.
Like, that's hard.
Yeah.
Thinking about, you know, me picking on Presbyterians online, none of you are a threat to me. So it's this effeminate cosplay Christianity where our country is burning. And instead we're, you know, debating these, I don't want to say they're dumb issues. Baptism is an important issue. But the reason I love the CREC is they understand we just may not sort this out.
Still brothers. We can work together.
Yeah.
Let's not just focus on that one issue.
Yeah. And it's just like,
yeah,
you know, brilliant men could not settle this debate. It's highly unlikely any of us are going to make meaningful progress. You know, on occasion, after you have built walls, worked hard. Yeah. You know, if we were hanging out in Utah one night, maybe we'd kick back, throw around baptism a little bit. But that's after we've loved our wives, built our households, started productive business. There's all these things the Bible says are far more important. And so many men in our circles seem to measure themselves by the minutiae.
Yeah. Yeah, or even you think about any type of public, you know, platform. I'm sure you've seen this as well. People probably don't realize, like, 99% of my day and my life is doing the boring, beautiful stuff of everyday life. You know, loving my wife and children, all that sort of stuff. It's also interesting, John, because you kind of bring to the table at a conference like this the foodie culture, which I've experienced as well, but I would say they're very different. So you've got your Go Rogue shirt on. One of the things that I found was Joel Salatin culture, foodie culture, they're really engaged locally already. So the things that, like, a lot of reform camp is like, oh, we need to invent how to get, you know, active local now. You guys are saying, we've been doing this.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
like, for a long time. My question is, why did foodieism pick up this grassroots localism so much earlier, whereas Christians, which seemed like would have, but why didn't they?
Well, when you look at the history, you know, conservatism, this is something, you know, let's go back to the 60s, the 50s. There was a split theologically in the 50s and 60s that really then became apparent in the 70s and 80s, where being locally rooted and being theologically rooted were sliced asunder.
Yeah.
So where Christianity became about a dominion theology that was almost in competition with the earth instead of cooperation with the earth. And the type of economics a lot of Christians embraced were antithetical to caring about anything local in your vicinity. Because, well, Christians are capitalists, and capitalism became synonymous with global capitalism.
And a lot of, like, max profit, no matter what the cost, that sort
of
thinking.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like, why would I pay 4 cents more for sneakers from the local shoe store ran by the guy in my community who may even be a member of my church when I can get it for that many cents cheaper over here, John? And you saw this. I'm going to name drop two more guys, but you still see this level of nonsense in Cody Leibolt and Jacob Brunton.
Yeah.
Where we have elevated economics. We have made economic concerns the litmus test of morality.
Specifically, Ayn Randian.
Yeah.
You know, that whole bag. And I think even Adam Smith and things like The Hidden Hand of Capitalism, I would say, well, there doesn't need to be a hidden hand. There needs to be a Christian moral conscience.
Yeah.
That needs to guide the way that we're, and that would include things like, you know, why would I not buy from a kid who made 2 cents a day in Taiwan versus my neighbor?
Yeah.
That might actually be loving my neighbor.
Yeah, you know, I've just never understood because, you know, Paul says, do not worry about your own interests only, but consider the interests of others more highly than yourself.
Yeah.
And so when I go to spend money, I have interests in spending money. I want to get a good product. I want to get it at a fair price. But Paul compels me to think about the person on the other side of that transaction. Mm. Well, are they being paid fairly? Is this a win for them as well as a win for you? And is it a win for your broader community? And so Salatin and the local foodie people realized that the industrial food system was lose, 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 and then a very narrow range of winners. And like, well, we want a system where as many partakers in what's happening walk away winning.
Well, don't you think too, like you I know you've been involved with raw milk and stuff like that. Don't you think part of it is, and maybe this is one thing we hope to see come out of a conference like this, but to actually see people having a game plan, you can walk away and actually do something and not just complain about them. Because I think that's also part of like conservative Christianity has been, we're really good at complaining, but when it comes down to like, well, start a food co-op or figure out how to do it, people are like, no, that's too hard.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as I don't know if I mentioned it last night, I said on Facebook, like conservative in America is marked by whiners over winners.
Mm.
It's, you know, you think about elite evangelical leadership, you think about elite conservative political leadership, they get up there and they will wail, you know, we just gave $50 billion to you. And, you know, it's this constant wine fest.
A lot of saber rattling.
Yeah. Wooden swords on cardboard shields. They can't cut anybody with. And that's why the left doesn't really actually care. They pretend there's a conservative resistance while knowing that there isn't.
Right.
So because conservatives don't carry weapons that they can actually hurt people with anymore.
Yeah, that's, you know, right.
And this is why so many conservatives hate somebody like Ron DeSantis.
Yeah.
Because DeSantis will actually wield the sword, because the government is a weapon. If Paul says the government wields the sword,
yeah,
that means the government is a weapon. And so whoever controls government controls the weapons. And DeSantis is willing to swing the sword.
Yeah, and that's frightful for, I think, a lot of people on both sides of the aisle, actually.
Oh, yeah, because, again, most Republicans, they want to pretend that there is no sword, which means the sword is only wielded by the left.
Yeah, that's right.
Which means you get transgender queer hour in your local library.
That's a blessing of liberty? Is that?
Yeah.
So, John, I want to ask you, last thing I want to ask you today is, you were talking about Samwise.
Uh-huh.
First of all, probably one of the best friends examples in all of literature that, like, I put this out on Twitter before. It said that, I think, how do you find a better friend, loyalty, all that, than Samwise? And people are like, yeah, I don't think there is one. But walk me through what you said. You said all of us want to be Aragorn.
Yeah, all of us want to be Aragorn or Gandalf. Some of us want to be Legolas.
Maybe Gimli.
Yeah.
Some people want to
be Gimli. Yeah, you know, if you're a chubby dude, you're like, I can be a Gimli.
I got a long beard.
Or a Faramir. You know, all of us want to be main characters.
But we're Samwise.
But it's true. Like, if you look at how Tolkien structures his writing and why he included Sam. Because Sam is who you actually can be.
Mm.
I
not even necessarily Frodo.
Yeah. Well, because again, Frodo,
he's chosen.
Exactly. Like, this is what I said in my one post, you know, like, not very few of us are ever going to be noble birth, great warriors, given very clear special tasks from God and providence. But every one of us can be faithful in the opportunities and duties God has given us. Mm. And one reason I think Tolkien made Sam a gardener, because that was Adam's original.
Interesting.
You know, like so, you know, Tolkien's books, he always said that the goal of good Christian fiction is to indirectly point to unalterable truths about the universe and not beat your audience over the head with them. You know, so Tolkien's like...
Subtlety.
Yeah. And you know, one of the subtle things is like Samwise is Adam. He's just a plain old gardener who has to defeat evil in his time, but using only the tools that he as an average person has provided. What are the tools average people have? Samwise can't fight an army of orcs. Samwise can't stand up to a Balrog. No, Samwise can be a faithful friend and help make sure that Frodo succeeds in a task that the narrative shows Frodo actually fails.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people miss that. Like, Frodo... And one reason I think Tolkien made Frodo fail is a reminder that none of us are actually up to the task in and of ourselves to stop evil. You know, even the greatest of us...
You need a fellowship. You need friends. Frodo could not have done that alone. But even, you know, in the movie, there's this scene where Frodo's trying to leave on his own. He's like, I have to do this by myself. And Sam's like, I know you do. And he goes with him. And I'm coming with you. Yeah, it's just great. John, as we leave here, what do you think the takeaway for people should be? Obviously, you know, read Lord of the Rings, think on Sam, be faithful in the ordinary. But I guess, what do you hope a conference like this accomplishes?
I hope it will help people realize that there are opportunities locally to make a tremendous difference in our country and in our culture by faithfully working county by county, region by region, to rebuild the walls and serve real living people and focus on real local problems where you can actually make a difference.
Awesome. Well, it's been a pleasure, John.
Dude, it's so good to see you in person.
I was enjoying watching you give your fiery speech. It was like 200 degrees in here last night when you got to speak.
Oh, man, the worst part was is I'd look down at my notes and I couldn't see them anymore.
Because the perspiration?
Yeah, because I'd sweat, so I'd look down.
I just assumed you were crying because you were so moved.
No, and all I see is like the notes are like looking through a piece of broken glass because it's just... Dude, it was so hot.
It was so hot. Well, awesome, John. I appreciate it, brother.
Man, appreciate everything. And again, you all with Hard Men, with Kings Hall, doing such great work and really focusing on the right types of it. So you all have been a blessing to my family. I have my sons listen to your stuff.
That's awesome.
So it's great what you're doing.
Awesome. Appreciate it, John.
One of our longings with the King's Hall and with the Hard Men podcast is to see Reformation happen in the church and then for Christendom to be built up in the world all around and outside the walls of the church. And one of the best ways that we've seen historically that this can happen is through simply reading and preaching and teaching the living, active, and spirit-filled Word of God. Speaking of which, Reformation Heritage Books has a copy of the Reformation Heritage KJV Study Bible for just $40. You're saving $20 on that. KJV, King James Version, has radically transformed the world. Many authors and scholars have said, look, if any one Bible has shaped the vernacular culture and thought of Western culture, above all things, it's the King James Bible. This is an absolutely phenomenal copy of that. It also includes the family worship notes that you find in the Family Worship Bible Guide. There's thoughts for personal and family devotions for every chapter. There's 36 articles in the Bible on how to live the Christian life. There's also guidance on how to experience the truths of the Bible in your own life. There's thousands of study notes with integrated cross-references, classic Bible text, of course, KJV with explanations of difficult words, and there's also more than 50 articles on key Christian teachings. You'll find, as you will in most study Bibles, a concordance, color maps, daily plan, and more. So be sure to check that out today at heritagebooks.org. Again, that's heritagebooks.org. Just $40 for the Reformation Heritage KJV Study Bible. You can order yours today. Again, go to heritagebooks.org. Next up, we've got Nate Spearing, and he's going to sit down and talk with Aaron Wren, who gave a talk on counterinsurgency.
We're at County Before Country in Ohio, and you gave a talk today. And I think, you know, I was, wanted to jump into this. Is my understanding is this will be end up being kind of a backstage pass thing to this event and kind of continuing conversations on the topic. I came up to you afterwards. You kind of laid out some high-level points and then expounded on them. And I told you I was a soldier.
Yeah.
And, you know, have been involved in counterinsurgency things in Iraq and Afghanistan, seeing kind of third-party actors, other states kind of coming in and viewing an opportunity to kind of kill Americans. So a lot of the stuff that I did in the latter parts of my career were targeting these insurgent networks and right. counterinsurgency stuff. So one of the things you were saying was, I think just maybe just say what your point was on the, about being an insurgency, or if that was how that was tied into your talk as well, because I don't want to pull it out of context or whatever.
Sure. So, you know, traditionally, I think a lot of conservative Christians have thought about themselves in a culture war context. Mm-hmm. And the idea of a culture war is sort of like you got Democrats on one side of the political battlefield, Republicans on the other. They're sort of fighting it out on election day. Or you get these, you know, Christian activists over here, secular activists over here, and they're sort of fighting it out. And my hypothesis here is that, you know, essentially the left won, in a sense, the culture war, in that they captured virtually all of the critical institutions that count in our society. You know, the elite media, the universities, the major corporations, the federal bureaucracy. You were in the military, even the military to a great extent.
Absolutely.
I was amazed when I said that I wouldn't want my son to grow up and go in the military. A number of ex-military people here said, that's right on. We don't join it. And, you know, the Supreme Court's conservative, but that's really it. And so I said, you know, this model when kind of the other side controls all the institutions, you need to think differently. You need to think more like you are the resistance. I use the term insurgency, but you can use the term resistance. Resistance going against the occupying army has come in and this hostile force. It's like occupying your land. And therefore, you have to think very differently about the world in terms of, you know, one, you want to kind of repel the invader, so to speak, but you have to use asymmetric tactics. You don't want to make the population hate you. You want to win the affections and the loyalty of the people. You know, things of that nature. And so I talked about, hey, you want to avoid, you know, some of these direct confrontations. You want to think about how to make allies among the civilian populations, things of that nature. And so it's a shift from what I call, like, you know, cultural war to cultural insurgency. I think you had some great thoughts, which is like, you know, insurgent makes you sound like the bad guy. I love that.
Well, I guess we've heard from
because because insurgents in our wars are always the bad guys.
Yeah.
So yeah, think about that. I very much got to think about that, and I love that because now I'm going to think the cultural resistance may be a better term something like that, or counterinsurgency. But that's a great pickup. One of the reasons that I like this is totally new material. Uh-huh. I get the feedback; it helps me think about how to refine it and talk about things differently.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's what we even kind of heard from some guys earlier on is don't create this echo chamber. Come out here and be with some of these guys, and you're bumping up against things, and you're getting a lot of good feedback. And one of the things that this camp here at County Before Country is a lot of different backgrounds.
Yeah,
this is not necessarily a denominational thing. This is we're in the on the front lines of the culture war.
Right. So what I like to say is decentralized, kind of different groups doing different things. Whatever Michael Foster's doing, you know, I love what Michael's doing.
Yeah.
I don't need to be coordinating everything I'm doing with what Michael's doing. We can come together and do this conference. It's better to have lots of independent people than to have, you know, big organizations, big leaders sometimes. Mm-hmm. I mean, in some contexts, you need bigger organizations, but you don't want to have everything tied up in large organizations today. And the other thing I see a lot of times in the conservative world, a lot of people, one of the ways you make a name for yourself is by throwing red meat to your followers and, you know, just slamming the left in these terms. And I'm like, well, that's good. I don't oppose that. But I also want to say you got to challenge your own side, too. Yep. We need to think about, okay, great. If we're so in the right, how come the left wins all the time? Mm-hmm. Right? If you're so much smarter than they are, how come they're winning? Maybe they actually know more than we do in some important ways. It's hard to think that. So I like to give talks like this that challenge the thinking on the conservative side as well as challenging the thinking kind of on the liberal side as well. I try to be rigorously independent in my thinking and just, this is what I see and call them like I see them.
Yeah.
But I also think a lot about how to communicate it. So I think the phraseology is very important. And so I'm going to think about this word, like cultural resistance, cultural this, cultural that. That's good to think.
Well, we heard about them taking the institutions and then defining the terms. Pause for a second.
Pause.
Estimated your, I guess, whatever you ate somewhere else. We have a lot of Chick-fil-A sandwiches. So they're in there. We're just going to say, go get some and take them with you, right? So there are free Chick-fil-A sandwiches in there. Please take a lunch. God bless.
So, yeah, I think that one of the things that I felt like is not letting even when the way that you phrased it back to me made me think about their side of things more too, is if we've said for sure that they have become so entrenched, because in Iraq it was very clear that these were the culturally they knew these were Iranians. Maybe from an American perspective, right, we don't know that these guys are foreign guys. We don't have the cultural understand the cultural nuances as, you know, ground pounding soldiers. They know who these foreign actors are. So maybe the institutions have become so homogenous now that the players, but I guess my thought is to say these institutions are way older than what you are espousing and what you're trying to say, and not letting them define it. So before we go into this talk, this is not the size of the octagon we're fighting in here. It's actually, you know, culturally, how far back this goes. And I'm not giving you this institution, but I also felt like you put that intention with understanding where you should kind of fight too. Like maybe talk about that a little bit more and how you're, what battles you're choosing. So maybe expound upon that a little bit more.
Yeah, for me personally, you know, I don't typically go around getting involved in every kerfuffle on the internet for the most part. I do sometimes, but for the most part, I stick to my issues, which are sort of cultural diagnostics for mostly the evangelical church, but others going forward. Things like this idea of shifting from maybe cultural war to cultural insurgency, cultural resistance, the three worlds framework. I'm pretty good at cultural diagnostics. I come from a management consulting background, so applying that, very important. And then, you know, I've also written a lot of men's issues. And so I kind of got into the Christian space through men's issues. This is anachronistic. This isn't the exact truth, but this is just to illustrate. I saw all these young men turning into people like Jordan Peterson, Joe Rogan, you know, Andrew Tate, but they're not going to the church. What's going on? And of course, it wasn't those guys back then. You know, Peterson was sort of a very, very, very small figure back then. But I saw all these online influencers, and the men were turning to them, and they were not going to the church. And part of it is because the church is telling them things that aren't true, unfortunately. Yeah. Not that they got the Bible wrong, but they tell you things like, you know, women are attracted to servant leaders. That's not true, actually. Don't believe that.
Yeah.
That's what they tell you. Jordan Peterson tells you that girls are attracted to boys who win status competitions with other boys.
Yep.
That's much more like what we saw in high school when the girls all wanted to be the captain of the football team.
Yeah. Right?
So,
and my own wife, we met in high school, and surprisingly, I don't, you know how much of it was me maturing just as a man and changing from a homeschool nerd into a man, but also there was a little bit more when I became a special operations war veteran. she married me at that point in my life, not the homeschool nerdy phase.
Exactly.
So I think that I've benefited from that. Going to war and coming back, I got the girl after that.
That's right. A guy on my list says, hey, you know, I'm a pilot. And whenever whenever I need to whip out the trump card, I just tell the women I'm a pilot. If I tell them they want to come for a ride on my plane, I'm in, and so it's, but that's the sort of thing, like this idea that like servant leadership is what women find attractive. It's not in the Bible. It's nowhere in the Bible. So a lot of times these pastors are really acting like life coaches. You know, the Bible doesn't talk about dating. So if they're giving out dating advice, they're no more authoritative than like you and me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I try to stick to that sort of stuff. I'm not really a theologian. You don't hear me spending a lot of time debating the Bible and theology because that's not my area of expertise. But that's sort of the men's issue. So I've been really focusing on the men's issues, trying to help the church in men's issues, helping men, to be better, better understand the world, help the church better to reach men. That's been another one that I go at.
So
but again, every time something happens, I don't jump on the bandwagon of the latest Twitter controversy. I ignore most of that, to be quite honest.
Yeah. I guess one of the things that, going kind of back to that, the violence aspect and the framework there, one of the couple of the podcasts I've done, I kind of have a multi-part theology of violence, is what I call it. And some of it's meant to kind of be shock and awe, and I'm not a pastor either, so I kind of, even listening to Doug and some people to qualify theology, maybe I shouldn't be using the word theology if I'm not a pastor, but I have prescribed men, and this is why I think that the Joe Rogans and the Jocko Willink type characters,
Jocko's another one.
They are men, and they're in the Terminalist and the Gladiator and the Braveheart categories, and there's not guys that have taken battlefield experience like those guys that are Christians and say, I did this in another life, and I bringing that intensity, but they're missing kind of that foundational piece. All of them are, and so some, a lot of stuff I've talked about, and I see the guys just get amped up. It's like, you need to be extremely dangerous, but the only framework I think that works for cultivating how to apply that capacity for danger and violence is the Christian worldview.
Right.
And there's a meekness, and there's these buzz phrases that are thrown around in masculinity, but essentially extremely dangerous. And then read through this, all these different Old Testament, guys, oh, you want 100 foreskins? I'll give you 200.
Yeah.
And that makes the church, like big church here, big Eva in America, uncomfortable to talk about that stuff, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. A lot of things too, is just guys like Jocko and Peterson, they just give you like basic, actionable, encouraging stuff. I used to use an example of Mark Driscoll. He drew a lot of guys, but he had this sort of drill instructor kind of approach. We're going to be tough. And that's not a lot of these pastors think. Men respond to toughness, but they like to tear people down, but they never build them back up.
Mm.
I mean, Jocko, explains to people, by the way, you say you don't have time to work out. You can get up at 4:30 in the morning and work out.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, like people like tweet or send him pictures of like their watch or their clock at 4:30 in the morning when they're up working out in the morning. It's like, wait a minute, I can actually do this.
Yes.
I don't personally get up at 4:30 in the morning to work out. But I mean, this idea that like, here's something, you can do, is like, they actually build you up and they give you practical encouragement, and they, give you a pat on the back when things are going the right way. They don't make excuses, but they're not just beating you up and telling you how you're a loser.
Yeah.
They're telling you how you can become a winner.
Yeah.
How to make progress. And that's what's missing from the church.
Yeah. And Michael Foster is talking about how much hunger there is.
Right.
They're looking for it wherever they can go. And I think a lot of pastors are squandering a moment in history because they haven't exercised dominion. Like, for me, it's very hard to have a obese pastor. My pastors are in shape, I don't know if that's I think it's more genetic than it is their workout regimen, but that cultivating the health, and even understanding as a soldier how much my nutrition, how much my sleep went into me being able to execute tactically.
Because
you think about your visual acuity, your ability to, your brain to function and make these decisions in dynamic environments. And that is comes out of actual physical health, that comes out of training. And so I feel like a lot of Christians are lazy. It's very easy to come to this conference and get very excited about this and then go back to your hometown and not eat right and to not have dominion over your home and treat your wife well and to do these things. And we can kind of escape and chase these kind of far off grand goals and not do what the work that's required at home.
Right. I mean, I'll say, you know, I was always extremely smart. And so I never had to work hard in school. And I got straight A's all through high school. And in college, I'm just like, whatever grade I can get. And by not really going to class and not doing the homework is fine with me. And I was able to just kind of coast through life, and I did pretty well. But I'm like, man, I had so much potential that was squandered because I just didn't work hard. And like now, you can always challenge yourself to do more. I feel like I'm more motivated to work harder and put in more hours and be more focused. And like, then I'm doing more than I've ever done at any point in my life in terms of trying to maximize what I'm given.
And what would you say that has an effect on your own joy personally and where you are comparing to life before?
Yeah, I don't know. I certainly am much happier. I mean, I was miserable in the past for a variety of reasons. But what I would say is it's easy to do this stuff when you realize I really do believe the work that I'm doing is related to the biggest challenges facing the church today. This is the most important stuff in many ways facing the American church today. And so I want to be engaged on the biggest problems and the most important problems. And when you're doing that, you have the opportunity to do that, which not everybody does. You know, one, it comes with a huge weight of responsibility. You know, when somebody sends me a link to a sermon and like somebody's quoting my work in their sermon, I'm like, this better be good work. It has to be rigorous. But secondly, you know, you're motivated to actually do stuff because you realize it's important and it's impactful. And so I'm very fortunate because not everybody I've done a lot of inane things in corporate America in my life. And, you know, it's good to not have to do that these days.
Awesome. Well, what maybe ended with, you know, you could tell guys leaving a conference or guys where they are in their life right now, like what you would say as you engage in all these masculinity issues, top one or two things that they need to do right now or changes that you would see that they're not doing. The matter.
I give you two things. Number one, in terms of what you should be doing, I always say the number one thing for the Christian is you've got to be a person of prayer. You can never pray too much. I mean, your prayer life is the most foundational thing I think we do spiritually. The second thing I say is, you know, different people respond to different things. What has always worked for me in trying to make changes in habits and improve is I call it the ratchet technique. It's like, start by doing one small thing. And then once you're doing that, add another one. And once you're doing that, add another one. And just cumulatively add small changes until you've built up small changes. So, you know, like all of us, I get out of shape occasionally. You know, I move, you know, when I moved to New York, I moved from New York to here and I got out of the gym and all that. Okay, so what am I going to do? I'm going to start by doing 10 push-ups a day. That's all I'm going to do, 10 push-ups a day.
Yep.
Then I'm going to increase it to 15, right? Then I'm going to start doing, you know, sit-ups. Then I'm going to start doing, you know, air squats. Then I'm going to start doing, you know, dumbbell curl. I mean, whatever. You should start adding on exercises. I'm going to start running. Add little things. To it. So like now I get up in the morning, I do some push-ups, I do a couple stretches, I read the Bible, you know, I take my the potato starch shake and things like that I make, and it's a routine in the morning. But it starts with just doing one thing. Start with one. If you can make one change and then keep going, that's good. And the other thing I say is it helps. The morning routine is a perfect place to apply this because you can integrate it with physical activities that you do every day by brushing your teeth. Imagine if you started by saying, I'm going to say the Lord's Prayer every morning after I finish brushing my teeth. You get that going. Now the brushing your teeth becomes the trigger to just automatically do it. Yeah. So when you integrate it with physical things, it really helps.
Awesome. Well, thanks for taking the time to discuss this a little bit. And look forward to following along with what you're doing in the future.
Thank you.
You got something next weekend, right?
Yes, yes.
Out west.
I'm speaking in Boise, Idaho, and then I'm speaking out in Battleground, Washington. And then I'm going to Miami. I'm speaking at the NatCon 3 conference. That's, you know, three talks in about 4 days.
So if people are
pretty big travel swing next week.
People are new to kind of what you're doing. Where would you direct them to go? How can they find more about kind of the work you're doing? And what can you do? Where do they go?
Go to my website, sign up for my mailing list, aaronrenn.com, AaronRenn.com. It's based on Substack. Basically, sign up for it.
Yep.
It's free to sign up. There's a lot of great free stuff there, and check it out.
Awesome. Thanks for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Wow. Some great content from John Moody, Nate Spearing, and from Aaron Renn. Appreciate those guys so much for stopping by the booth so that we could do some backstage interviews at County Before Country. Again, thanks to Michael Foster and company for hosting us for that event, letting us do some media coverage. Speaking of media, if you love the Hard Men podcast, you want to support this work and this show, you also want to get exclusive access to new content as it comes out early, also bonus content. We've got Eric and Ben to the internet. We've had a lot of exclusive interviews and content under the paywall at Patreon. You can sign up today, become a patron for as little as $5 a month, and you can get access to that content. Again, definitely recommend that. We talk about a lot of great stuff, and we appreciate those who are patrons. Really help support this work and see it furthered. We want to do more work on biblical masculinity, and we appreciate you partnering with us for that. Again, a special shout out to Quinn and Samantha Bible at Salt and Strings Butchery, my all-time favorite ribeye producing location. If you haven't tried their ribeye yet, you need to do that. It's literally life-changing. Every time I cook one, I say to my boys, they get so annoyed. But I say to them, I was like, guys, I don't want to lie to you. This is the best one yet. And we're about 20 ribeye cookings deep. So definitely check them out, saltandstrings.com. Quinn and Samantha Bible doing wonderful work. Anthony's over there butchering like a king. You can check him out on Instagram as well, Salt and Strings. I do, just because I love seeing that beautiful marbled meat cut up on a daily basis. And then I go in the kitchen and I thaw it out and I put it on the grill and I eat it. And it changed my life. And the last thing I will say, definitely appreciate all of you who showed up at County Before Country, came by to say hello, met a lot of wonderful people, did a lot of networking, hung out with Pastor Andrew Isker. He's doing great work with Gab. We met some people from just about, I think, like every state. It was amazing. We met the crew from Tennessee and really just wonderful people. So if we did get to connect, thank you. Appreciate all of your support. So grateful to hear about how God is at work in your life through this show and through so many other wonderful content producers, Michael Foster, John Moody, of course, Brian Sauvay, his music, check that out as well, briansauvay.com. But again, thank you guys so much. It was just overwhelming and overwhelmingly good to meet all of you. Until next time, stay frosty, fight the good fight, act like men.